My name is Laura Briggs, and I was Laura Kermode. We lived near Laxey, and I started at the Park Road School on the 3rd of September 1935, continuing through to 1941. To get to school, we in the country had to travel by bus, and at that time, most of the people working in town travelled the same way. So in the mornings, we went out to catch our bus at 8:10, and we formed the convoy of all the buses travelling into Douglas. At that time, we girls had a separate bus, and the boys travelling to St Ninian's had one too, but never the twain should meet. And it was only when the war time came along and the petrol started to become scarce that boys and girls travelled in the same bus. No matter what the weather, we were expected to turn up at school, and the Laxey route being perilously hilly, we often enough had to hike part of the way and pick the bus up at a place where it could turn and where it was safe for it to travel. The conductors at that time, because we had a conductor and a driver on the single-decker buses, the conductors looked after us as if they were our own family, as if we were their own family, rather. And we knew everybody on the bus services, and they were very kind to us. There was only one very sad occasion when, on having been staying at school a bit longer, I think it was on a Friday night, I was travelling home on one of the service buses. It stopped at Bulldrine for the conductor to deliver a parcel to the post office, and on coming out, he didn't look and ran straight into the path of a heavy van. He was killed instantly. Most of the passengers were very upset about it, and we had to remain there for quite some time until the police had sorted out all the details. While we were at school, of course, particularly at some of the times, there were some good causes that we did support. I remember in fourth form, Miss Frazier was our form mistress, and she was the instigator of us knitting 4-inch squares, which were all stitched together and made into blankets and shawls to send to the Rhondda Valley in Wales, where the poverty and the unemployment had caused great distress. Of course, we were at school when the war started, and as with everything else, we had to take precautions in case there were any air raids during the daytime. And there was one time we marched down, we were collected and we marched down to the Falcon Brewery, to the cellars down there, which was to be our haven in the case of an air raid. We were down among the barrels and the smell of the hops. And I know that we never needed to go down there, but we knew that there was safety down there if there was ever a time when we had to evacuate the school. I think at times when we were having our sports lessons and our games, there must have been shortages of money. And at times we were bussed to what we call the rec for our tennis games or for our hockey, while at other times we had to walk. Chiefly we walked to Tramode, to the playing fields down there for hockey. But we did play hockey on the Cunninghams field behind the grandstand on Glencrutchery Road. And there was one very notable afternoon when William Cunningham was flying his plane and wanted to land it, because the hangar was there at the bottom of the field, the site of the new police station now. We had to abandon our game, but I must say it was much more exciting watching a plane coming down in the same field as we were standing in, rather than scoring goals. We did go down to Tramode, but we had to walk down there and played alongside of the drill hall. And there was one very wet day when we had thunder and lightning and a terrific downpour. This was after the war had started, and the army personnel who were then in the drill hall invited us in. So the hockey team and the mistresses who were with us were all inside of the drill hall. Again, it was a case of the buses playing a big part in our lives to us country girls, because we had to run from the Tramode playing fields up to catch the bus at St Ninian's, which left the school just after 4 o'clock.
Mary Norris. I came to the Isle of Man when I was 9 years of age in 1913, and I lived out of Port Sodrick at a house called Bayview, facing the sea, facing the Marine Drive. We used to go to school, my brother and I. We both went to Park Road. He took the Eastern District Secondary School, and I to the Park Road School. At first we travelled along the railway line to the railway station and came in by train. But this was all stopped after there had been an accident of some kind, either at Port St Mary or Castletown, when no one was then allowed to walk along the railway line. So we discovered that by walking directly into Douglas, we could leave the house 10 minutes later than we would have to if we had walked the roads to the station. Having got to the railway station, we then travelled along Athol Street via Finch Road and up to the Park Road School. But when we got to Finch Road, nearly always Parson Taggart's wife was opening this door and ushering her herd off to school. Betty, Hugo and the whole tribe of them. One day when it was very, very wet, I got to school and I was soaked. My boots were squelching water from end to end. And by this time I was very miserable. And Miss Lace, who was the teacher in the lower school, in the lowest class of the school, took my boots from me and took them to the teacher's room to dry, where they had a lovely fire burning in the hearth. All went well until it was time to go home, when it was discovered poor Miss Lace had put the boots inside the fire guard, and so I was quite unable to put them on. They were so stiff. Park Road School, which is the downstairs part of the school, there were three classes. Miss Lace took the junior class, Mr. Green took the middle class, and Miss Shimmin the others. And we had one headmaster called Mr. Ridge. Mr. Grundy had nothing to do with the downstairs school. He was headmaster of the Eastern District Secondary School. And Kate Hasler was the headmistress of the Eastern District Secondary School at that time. For nearly a bit more than a year, because coming in the spring, the school year had almost finished. So I spent the first year, that next year, with Miss Lace, and then I went into Daddy Green's class. Now, he was a lovely man. He was the kindest, gentlest person one could ever meet. And of course, the war was on, and he had three sons, four sons, three of whom were killed during the war. And I can remember quite well word coming to the school as each of these sons were killed. We were all so upset and so sorry. And he was such a wonderful, kind old man. His surviving son became Mr. Green, the dentist, who has also passed on now. But my son, Christopher, went to school with his son at King William's College. We were very short of teachers during the war, and so they had to double up for various subjects. And Mr. Greenwood, who was commonly known as Beetle, was taking us for Latin at one time, where I had been when the Caesars were given out, I don't know. But when it came to the lesson, I just didn't have a Caesar and said to Mr. Greenwood, "I haven't got a Caesar, Mr. Greenwood." So he said to me, "Come over to Salisbury Street during the playtime and I will give you one." So dutifully I went over to Salisbury Street and asked for my Caesar. So he turned to me and said, "Would you like one with a translation or one without?" I said, "Oh, one with a translation, please." And was immediately presented with one with a translation, which of course the boys in the class got for the first half of the week and the girls got for the second half of the week, and we all appeared with the same answers. But it didn't much matter because he didn't know any Latin either. And he was only a page ahead of us.
My name is Catherine Cowan. I'm better known as Katie. I spent my first year at school at Miss Brown's, Woodburn Square, where all the rest of the family had been. I didn't really like it, and begged to go to the school that the little boy down the road seemed to like so much, Murray's Road School. It would be fair to say that Murray's Road was very different from Miss Brown's. But I very soon grew tougher and learned to puzzle away doggedly at problems printed on thick cards, puzzling posers, as Mr. Hall, the headmaster, called them. Mr. Hall only bothered much with what he called his promising pupils. His pride lay in the number of scholarship places to Park Road School, the number of places that could be claimed by Murray's Road School. 11 scholarships were awarded to girls, twice that number to boys in the island. I was lucky enough to be listed in third place among the girls. I remember standing with pop-out eyes and nose nearly touching the glass of the window of the courier office in Ridgeway Street, opposite the town hall. Was it called the Courier in those days? I somehow think so. Or was it the Chronicle? No. Mona's Herald, that was it. The editor of Mona's Herald was the first to get the news of the scholarship exam, for he was a member of the Education Committee. Because my father had paid for 4 other members of our family to go to the school at Park Road, I wasn't allowed to take the free place. Fair enough, if my father's business matters during the war had not been shattered, as many other businesses were. And my father was already in the grip of terminal illness. My fees could not be paid for. I was still young enough to be able to sit the scholarship exam again the next year, and this time I was permitted to have my scholarship. This time I was several places lower in the list. The 11 scholarship girls were drafted into Form 1A with the scholarship boys. We sat primly at the back of the room, like nuns in a convent, but without stone walls. In the little building where 1A shared one of the 2 classrooms, the ground floor was given over to a laboratory. Physics, I think. Halfway up the stairs was quite a biggish cloakroom, built for the student teachers for whom the structure was originally built. Glowing with pride of achievement, we girls determined not to be completely ignored by the greater number of boys in 1A, and realised that it would be necessary to give up girlish charm and delicate mannerisms. We would equal the boys in their own level. So we accepted the common habit of calling masters by their nicknames. There was Paddy O'Neill. There was the Duke Boardman, who flattered himself that he was of French descent from the Dukes of Bordeaux. Poon's Camel was a brilliant mathematician. He loved money problems that he inflicted on us. He always spoke of poons, not pounds, which had a cold sound and didn't express the very real value of the handsome coinage. Beetle Greenwood, of him the least said the better. He wore great heavy boots with a very solid heel to increase his meagre height. His boots were beetle crushers. His title was Beetle, based not only on his boots. He was a horror. The feeling towards Beetle had a unifying effect upon both boys and girls. We all hated Beetle. For Paddy O'Neill, we had the greatest respect. The belief that he was in direct descent from the kings of Ireland was genuinely accepted throughout the school. A very handsome man of fine physique, he exuded dignity. As for his temperament, pupils wisely refrained from testing that. Each pupil in Paddy's senior Latin class, he taught seniors only, was instructed to print large in the new exercise book, four words, Latin words they were, out discede. In translation, either learn or get out. All heeded that warning. It just would not have been wise to slack in Paddy's class.